You know the phrase, imitation is the greatest form of flattery? It's actually also one of the biggest no-nos, I think, in social media. I believe that YouTube is going to either abandon shorts or it's going to just roll that right back up into the rest of YouTube.
Hey gang, it's Monday, December 20th. Debbie, Paul, Andrew and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily, a new marketer podcast made possible by Basis Technologies. I'm Marcus and today I'm joined by all those names I just mentioned. Let's introduce them. We start with our principal analyst who heads up our social media and international coverage. It's Deborah Aho-Williamson.
Hey Marcus.
Hey Debbie, we're also joined by one of our principal analysts on the retail and e-commerce team. You know him as Andrew Lipsman.
Hey everyone, good to be here.
Hey chap, and finally we have our principal analyst who heads up our advertising and media practice. It's Paul Werner.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Hey folks, before we start the episode, as per usual, fact of the day. It would only take you, well, how long do you think it would take to drive to space? If you had gotten your car and instead of going to the grocery store, to the gym, to a friend's house, you were like, I'm just going to drive to space. I'm going to point my car upwards like Harry Potter 2. I think it's Harry Potter 2. I just started watching them. And you just drove your car into space. How long do you think it would take?
17 days.
17 days? My God, how slow is your car? I didn't say bike there, Andrew. No, that's what I would have guessed as well, my friend. I'm only saying that because I know the answer. If you got in your car and you turned on the ignition and drove up into the sky at 60 miles per hour, it would take you 1 hour. It takes you an hour to get to outer space, according to astronomer Fred Hoyle. Of course, this is purely theoretical. But it's fun to think about. That means it would be quicker to drive straight up to space than it would be to drive from Newark Airport to Philly, or from the Bronx to Fairfield, Connecticut, or from Chicago to Milwaukee, or from Newport Beach in LA to San Diego. Some references for you wherever you live.
Or from 34th Street to 49th Street on a Friday afternoon.
Very true. Very true. Now, to get to the moon, that's going to take you about 6 months in the car. So don't give me that, are we there yet? I don't have time for that.
Marcus, I'm a little concerned that I was off by a pretty wide margin right in advance of our very specific predictions episode.
It doesn't bode well for you.
Nah, it's inauspicious.
Also, at what point, I mean, if you're driving into space, you're going to bust out of that 65 mile an hour speed limit, so you can probably crank it up to like 100 or 120.
That's right, true, yeah.
Well, actually, I was going to say guarantee that you're not going to hit anything, but there's all that space junk, so I guess you do
that's
have to
true.
Be careful.
Now, why are you driving 60? There are no police up here.
Yeah.
Anyway, today's real topic, some very specific 2022 predictions. All right, folks, thanks for hanging out for this episode. What are we talking about? We're talking about very specific predictions. And every year we have a bunch of different trends reports that come out and our analysts in the different areas, video, social, retail, et cetera, healthcare, banking. They come out with what they think are the most important trends of the year. And we're going to be doing a bunch of those in the new year, the first couple of weeks of the year. Look out for those episodes where we'll be talking about trends for those different verticals. But in this episode, we're talking about very specific trends, hyper, ultra specific trends, which may or may not come true because they're very specific. And we did this episode, I guess, last year. Yeah, I guess it probably was about a year ago. And we had a great time. And so we decided to do it again. Andrew, do you want to give us a bit of context for this episode?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I don't know about you, but in prediction season, you know, there are predictions that run the gamut, but I always really like the ones that are hyper specific. And in this case, it's an opportunity for us to, you know, really go out on a limb and predict something that in all likelihood, it's not going to happen. These are probably low probability events. But the good news for us as an analyst is if we are right about any of them, we get to come back and do a victory lap and say, yeah, can you believe I predicted that? And if we're not right, then most people will have memory hold it and we'll just completely forget about it. So that's the idea. And bottom line, I don't know, I like very specific predictions. So I think other people do too. Let's give the people what they want.
Let's do it. We should put some money on this since I have to penny money up. Let's jump into it. Last year, what did we predict? We predicted Facebook would have a leadership change. There's been some changes at the top. We predicted that Amazon would buy movie theaters. Not quite yet. And we predicted that SVODs would merge. Paul, was that before HBO Max said that, you know, there was rumors that they might be doing something with CNN Plus and is it Discovery Plus?
Yeah, I think it was before all that.
Oh, check us out. So yeah, we got some of them right, some of them not so right. But let's talk about some of the ones we have in store for you this year. We've broken it into some different themes, I guess. Social media, we'll start there. We'll move into retail, and then finally some general media predictions, TV and video, things like that. We start with social media, and Paul, you have one which kind of bleeds between social media, but also your coverage area of TV and video, or more specifically, digital video. Paul, kick us off with a specific trend for 2022.
Yeah, I'd like to preface this with something that just popped into my head as a tech prediction, which is that Elon Musk is going to develop a car that takes us into space in less than 60 minutes. And that's going to happen the next month. Forget about all of 2022. But in all seriousness, so here's my first very specific prediction, and that is that TikTok will push YouTube to do something reckless. YouTube has been an innovator and market leader for over 15 years, which is an eternity in digital media time. And in all of that time, it's had a lot of competition, but until recently had not faced an existential threat. I think that some of the things that TikTok has started doing do represent that existential threat. And I'm thinking of things like short, irreverent videos that go viral, a creator and influencer-based ecosystem, huge appeal among millennials and Gen Z, music discovery, which is a big one, the concept of being TikTok famous, which is now almost as ingrained in our vernacular as the term YouTuber. And maybe the one that kind of tipped the scales for me to think about this was how-to videos, which had been a domain where YouTube had uncontested leadership, but now we're starting to see TikTok encroach into that space as well. So I think all of this is forcing YouTube into a place that seems unfamiliar for them, which is basically being reactive. We saw this when YouTube came out with YouTube Shorts a little over a year ago, which I know that was clearly a response to the TikTok phenomenon, and I'll leave it to Debbie to talk a little bit more about that. But I think for my prediction, in 2022, I see YouTube doing something that really shows that this threat from TikTok is real. And it could be somewhere along the lines of music discovery or gaming or maybe something else.
So yeah, what is this reckless thing, Paul?
Yeah, I mean, I know we're trying to be very specific. I don't have something specific that they're going to do, but I just think that when we see it, we're all going to say, yes, that's because of TikTok. And I also think it's going to be somewhat of a misstep, something where we see YouTube kind of like quaking in their boots a little bit.
Okay. Debbie, one of your specific predictions also lives in the YouTube realm. Talk to us.
Yeah, this is actually a great follow-up to Paul. And so to set the tone, and it has to do with TikTok too. So TikTok, as we all know, is a short video platform. It rose to fame and, you know, success on the back of very short videos that are extremely eye-catching, ear-catching, and very, very viral. So a lot of companies have since then tried to copy TikTok. We've got Snapchat with Spotlight. We've got even most recently vertical video features on Twitter and Spotify, Instagram with Reels, YouTube, of course, with Shorts, as Paul mentioned. And what I'm thinking about here is, you know the phrase, imitation is the greatest form of flattery?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's actually also one of the biggest no-nos, I think, in social media. And really? I believe that YouTube is going to either abandon Shorts, which is its short video feature, or it's going to just roll that right back up into the rest of YouTube. I don't think Shorts, and possibly some of the other short video features on other apps, have a long shelf life. And I think this could be the thing that Paul is alluding to, that that YouTube could do this year, and it could be a recognition that TikTok is just too big and too powerful and has just completely captured this idea of short video and is really the only one that's going to be successful at it.
Debbie, it's fascinating because you said that imitation is the greatest form of flattery. However, in social media, you think it's something that it shouldn't be done. You should be avoiding that. However, Jasmine, one of our colleagues, she put together that matrix of the different social platforms, the different features, and you would check the box if the social platform does that feature. And pretty much every social platform, it seemed, was doing the same features now, and they kind of copied each other. In your mind, that's not the right playbook. And do you see social platforms kind of pulling back from that a little bit?
It's not the route to success. I mean, sure, okay, we saw Instagram famously co-opt stories from Snapchat and turn that into a wild success. Okay, for sure, that was something successful. But I think, whenever you start to see multiple platforms glom onto this, and you saw that with stories. I mean, you saw LinkedIn launching stories, which it shut down. You saw Twitter's launching stories, which it shut down. It really sounds like even though many platforms will try to imitate each other's features, it's very rare that more than one is going to be wildly successful with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they make a big splash saying, you know, this is a new feature, we're copying this. I don't say that, but that's what everyone's thinking. However, to your point, a lot of these platforms have scaled back certain features and kept it, you know, pretty quiet because they don't want it to be seen as a failure. They're just realizing this isn't for us. Debbie, at the start of the year, I think it was the start of this year. I don't even know anymore. Clubhouse. Whenever we were talking about Clubhouse, we were talking about it until the cows came home, which is a reference probably no one else gets because I think it's a British thing. But anyway, we talked about it a lot. And we didn't really seem to talk about it too much the last, I don't know, 6 months or so. We've had some other players come into the space, Green Room, Spotify. Spotify's Green Room, Facebook working on something. We've also had Twitter Spaces, etc. But the social audio space seemed to have quietened down to a certain extent. We just definitely haven't talked about Clubhouse on the podcast for a while. But you have a very specific prediction for Clubhouse for next year.
I sure do. Yeah. So yeah, rewind to the beginning of the year. There was so much media attention surrounding Clubhouse and social audio. We published a full report. I wrote a full report on social audio and what marketers needed to know about it, how they could use it if they were interested in venturing in, and what was going on with all of the other companies that were starting to launch social audio features like Twitter and Facebook. Clubhouse, you know, roared to massive success at the beginning of the year. It had 9.6 million downloads. Installs, I should say, globally in February, according to Sensor Tower. And then as the year went on, Clubhouse started to fizzle. It had just 1.7 million installs globally in August and only 962,000 in October.
Wow.
Again, all those figures according to Sensor Tower data. So we're really seeing Clubhouse fading, trailing off. And even though it's added more features to make the app more social, there's really not much sign that it's helping the app regain traction. And so the very specific prediction that I'm planning to make, that I am making, is that Clubhouse will either shut down or be acquired by another company. So there's that. Mm. And then on top of that, I think what Twitter and Facebook are doing is really just ancillary at best. Again, going back to my copycat statement, no one's really going to be super successful at this, I don't think. Maybe not even Clubhouse at this point. And what Twitter and Facebook are doing will just end up being more in the guise of podcasts, I believe, than anything that's related to live social audio.
So let me come back to, I want to touch on those 2 points. First of all, Clubhouse, you say, will not last the year as a standalone company, will either be acquired or shut down entirely. A, which one do you think is more likely at this point?
Oh, you're holding my feet to the fire here.
Yeah, absolutely. And B is kind of, if it is going to be acquired by someone, I mean, without, you know, have to name a company, but there is like a type of company that you can see kind of snatching them up.
So I'm going to go with acquired. Acquired for either the people or the, you know, the assets, the user base, one of those three, or maybe all three of those three. The type of company, that's a hard one because in the social space, we've seen some very unusual, you know, mashups of companies acquiring and moving into spaces that you didn't expect. I mean, dating all the way back to many years ago when Facebook, now Meta, acquired WhatsApp.
Yeah, remember when Microsoft tried to buy TikTok?
Yes. And then more recently, you just took the words out of my mouth. Microsoft, TikTok, Walmart, TikTok. So right. I'm not going to go out there and say what type of company would acquire Clubhouse, but I think that route is probably more likely than Clubhouse shutting down.
All I can say is Clubhouse is the new Quibi.
Yeah. and the second point you made, Debbie, was Twitter and Facebook are going to put more emphasis on pre-recorded audio, less on live audio next year. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think we're already kind of seeing that happen. You know, Twitter had said originally that it was going to give Spaces its own tab in the Twitter app. And as far as I can tell, that hasn't happened yet. It's really just a part of the app. And then Facebook, when it introduced live audio rooms at the height of the craze over social audio, that sounded exciting. But then more recently, it squashed all of these audio initiatives that it had come up with so far this year, including things like podcasts and short form audio, into just a section of its video hub, Facebook Watch. So mm-hmm. when you see things like that, you go, okay. If the companies themselves aren't putting a whole lot of emphasis on it, chances are their users aren't either.
Yeah. Andrew, you've got a bonus, very specific prediction for us to wrap up the social media segment, right?
Yeah. And I think it plays off of the same theme of a lot of social players maybe running scared from TikTok. My prediction is that Facebook will finally begin to quote unquote underperform the market. And I mean that both in terms of underperforming its peers in terms of usage trends, and that will have follow-on effects in terms of its performance on the financial markets. So let me get a little bit more specific. I think that we're going to see Facebook finally report its first domestic user declines. And that's something that Wall Street always looks at very closely. You know, it's been slowing for a long time. And I think that, you know, we've seen some time spent declines in recent years, and then it got kind of a pandemic bump, but it's come back off of that. And I think that the unwinding of the network effects is going to start to accelerate a bit more. Now, that said, even though we've previously seen some decline in time spent, Facebook's monetization engine has been so powerful that it's basically overwhelmed those other negative trends, right? They just keep increasing average revenue per user. But the monetization engine is now going to run into headwinds. We've already seen it happen with their latest quarterly earnings, referring to Apple's app transparency tracking initiatives. And so I think Facebook's just going to be feeling it from the usage and monetization side, and that there's, you know, no alternative but for us to see some real material slowing of its previous growth trends. At the same time, Facebook is investing in their future in the metaverse as Meta, and they're going to be spending a lot of money. So that's going to hit their bottom line. So I think if you have a slowing top line and crimping of the bottom line, I just think that puts them in a position where investors will start to look at the stock differently than they have in the past. And in the past, they've been able to navigate crises because they've always performed when it comes down to their quarterly earnings.
Debbie, you're our social expert. It's a very specific prediction, but how outlandish are these thoughts? How off the rails has Andrew gone with this prediction?
Well, yeah, I'm going to disagree with him on part of that. So on the usage trend, yes, it's possible we could see a decline in the U.S. Right now, we're not forecasting that. We're basically forecasting a flatness this year in usage of Facebook users. But, we on the social side of the house here think that Facebook is going to be able to overcome a lot of the challenges it's facing with regards to the app tracking transparency and privacy concerns, the things with Apple. It's working very hard to come up with new ad formats and ad measurement capabilities. And it's also very, very, very heavily invested in social commerce, which I think is a very new area that could drive a lot of advertising revenue. So we're more bullish on the advertising and not being impacted as much as Andrew thinks. So it'll be interesting to come back after quarterly earnings in the next couple of quarters and see which one of us is right.
Yes, indeed.
And just to be clear, the usage declines, Andrew, are you talking just the Facebook app or also Instagram?
It's Facebook specifically, which is a big driver. Instagram's still doing fine, right? So that's another factor that has kind of helped lift the overall ship for Facebook. But yeah, it's more specific to the Big Blue app.
So there are very specific social media trends. TikTok will push YouTube to do something reckless. YouTube will abandon Shorts. Clubhouse will not last the year, at least as a standalone company, and Facebook will underperform the market. We move to retail trends. Surprise, we're talking about Amazon. Andrew, you've got one for us.
Yeah, I think 2022 is the year of physical retail for Amazon. And to put a little bit more specificity behind it, I think that Amazon is going to roll out a lot more Amazon Go and Amazon Fresh locations, taking their number to well over 200. I had thought about being even more bullish and saying 300, although I'm tempering my expectations. I know, right? But I'm tempering my expectations a bit on Amazon Go, because Amazon Go locations, the rationale for that is driven a lot by downtowns. And I don't think downtowns have fully come back yet. So there's less incentive right now to roll those out. I'm more bullish on the Amazon Fresh initiative. There's 20 or so locations now. I think they've brought the cost down to the technology. I think they're figuring out what's working and they're ready to start scaling. And I think they're also looking over their shoulder, knowing that, you know, I've always seen physical retail as the fuel for their ad business. It's that first party data and consumer purchases, specifically in consumer goods, that fuels their targeting and measurement of how ads are performing. So to me, that's kind of the thesis of why they want to do it. But right now, you have competition with Walmart that has the biggest brick and mortar footprint out there. And then Instacart, which is kind of pulling from consumer purchases in brick and mortar locations across, you know, 300 some grocery retailers, they've got advantages over Amazon. Amazon needs to play catch up. So I think now that things are working, they need to put the pedal to the metal. And we're going to see a lot of emphasis on that rollout this year.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Amazon is obviously a giant in the online shopping space, but we kind of forget that how many physical stores they actually have, especially in terms of different types of stores, not a huge footprint, but lots of different flavors of store. Amazon Go store, the cashless checkout ones, they've got Amazon Fresh, they've got the 4-star store, they've got Whole Foods, which they own. My question is two parts. A, why do you think Amazon Fresh is most likely to take off and do well? And B, what kind of customers are they going to get? Are they going to be stealing customers from any other supermarkets?
I think, well, first off, I think as for some of the other ones, like the department store and 4-star, I think they're still just dabbling in those categories. Eventually, they'll want to scale those a bit more. CPG is very strategic. Grocery is very strategic because it's fast-moving consumer goods. And that, again, it's all about the ad business. And, you know, it's not Whole Foods. They don't sell a lot of the standard consumer brands. So this Amazon Fresh store concept is really what's going to be hospitable to those brands that will become the core advertisers. So that's really how and why I see it playing out in that category.
Mm-hmm. Whole Foods, there's been it was a big splash when they bought them. I don't even know. It feels like 1,000 years ago for $14 billion or however much they paid. They've not really done much with them thus far. I think they account for about 4%. Or maybe it's just physical. What accounts for 4%? That's just their physical stores, right? So that is all of their physical stores for Amazon?
Yeah, right. It's a relatively modest slice of their overall revenue. It's not growing particularly fast and it's not driving big profits, right? So it basically doesn't move the needle on Amazon as a company.
Right. What happens there? What do we think they're going to end up doing with Whole Foods eventually?
It's still a decent sized footprint grocery retailer. It attracts, you know, more affluent consumers. So I think there's strategic value that may factor into other things. I don't think there's any reason to do something rash and get rid of it. I think at the moment, not really adding to the business value nor taking away from it. So it probably will still have a place unless they have a real reason to do something drastic.
Okay. And we mentioned over 200 of these stores. So you're assuming that most of these are going to be Amazon Fresh, the majority of them?
I think the Amazon Fresh strategy is about building totally new stores from the ground up, not transitioning Whole Foods. So yes, I think that they're going to roll out from the ground up these new store locations. And they have, you know, all of the technology that they've been building for retail is starting to work better and better in larger store environments. In fact, there's one by me in Illinois that's a large store format location that's the first ever to use the technology. So that proves to me, and they're apparently doing it at much lower cost, that, you know, all the kind of forces that say, okay, now's the time to ramp this up, I think they're ready. And there's a lot of motivation given the competitive environment.
Okay. So a very specific trend for retail. Amazon will drastically accelerate its physical store rollout. And Andrew says it will surpass 200 Amazon Go and Amazon Fresh locations in 2022. All right. Time for In Other News. But first, a quick word from our sponsor, Basis Technologies. Today's podcast is made possible by Basis Technologies. Basis Technologies has created a digital advertising platform that connects people, automates processes, and unifies channels, bringing together programmatic, site direct, search, social, and CTV into one single interface. And through the power of automation, Basis enables brands, agencies, and publishers to build and operate a healthy, secure, efficient, and profitable advertising organization. Ready to take control of your advertising? Go to basis.net today. That's www.basis.net. Basis Technologies, the future of advertising has arrived. We move to some media trends now, and we're sticking with Amazon. Paul, what are you thinking?
So I'm thinking that Amazon will buy a sports media company, as in a broadcaster or streaming service. Amazon has leapfrogged all the other tech firms when it comes to live sports streaming. If you recall, a few years ago, Twitter was very much in that game, as were YouTube and Facebook. At this point, those other companies have essentially capitulated and resorted to things like celebrity-driven shows and interviews and behind-the-scenes stuff. So all ancillary content, but not live game streaming. Whereas Amazon has done the opposite. They've really doubled down on the big sports rights that usually other, you know, broadcasters compete for. The most notable one being Thursday Night Football, which they have exclusively as opposed to on a simulcast basis. So they've spent lavishly on rights to sports properties, not just, you know, football, not just NFL, but a lot of other top leagues and top sports around the world. So I think the next logical step for them would be to buy up an existing company or streaming service. And it could be something like DAZN or beIN Sports or FuboTV, just to name three that have different business profiles, but they have the common denominator of already having a set of rights and relationships and technology and audience reach, which are all of the things that Amazon is striving for with the sports rights that it's been licensing.
Just to add to Paul's one thing, I like this prediction a lot, Paul. And one, I like to read the tea leaves too. And there's a little detail that I've noticed on Amazon. I don't know if anyone else has experienced this, but I've gotten little random pop-ups that ask me, are you a Bulls fan? Or am I a fan of different sports teams? Like, they're trying to gather that information. So that tells me they're sniffing around this sports opportunity for some reason. And, and this would certainly make sense.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. They're definitely intensely interested in learning more about people's behaviors and affiliations. And they specifically mentioned that to me when I interviewed them for a sports report earlier this year. So I think you're on the receiving end of that effort, Andrew.
So, Paul, let's take this a step further. They buy them. Let's pretend it's DAZN, beIN Sports, whatever. Then what happens? Do they roll them up into some other service? Do they keep them as standalone and just use the data, use the viewers, the subscribers?
I think it depends on, it could be territory specific. I mean, you know, what Amazon is doing is a global effort, and some of these brands have more traction around the world than they do here.
Right.
So it could be that, you know, DAZN, for example, maybe if Amazon buys them and DAZN has all these, you know, rights for wrestling or soccer in Europe, and Amazon perceives that the brand equity is strong there, then I could see where they would keep it as a standalone brand over there, but maybe use some of the technology and the IP to power other projects that aren't necessarily branded with that company. So I think it could be a mix.
And would this be, do you think, a first of many moves or a couple of moves, or they'll buy this and then that'll be enough and they'll kind of grow organically?
No, I think the sky's the limit. I think Amazon has very serious ambitions in this space, and I don't think it's going to stop at a small acquisition or at sort of like incremental progress. I think it really wants to be a dominant player. And I think within a few years, we're going to think of Amazon right alongside, you know, ESPN and all the other big network sports networks when it comes to acquiring rights and streaming. I think they're also doing some innovative stuff when it comes to the actual streaming experience, which I think a lot of other media companies have not done as much.
Yep. Our next prediction is about Disney and what they plan to do with owned property Hulu. Paul, what are they going to do with it?
Yeah, and this one is admittedly a bit counterintuitive. What I'm thinking is that Disney will essentially reposition or rebrand Hulu. Now, you know, if you factor out YouTube, Hulu is the number three SVOD, streaming video on demand or subscription video on demand service in the U.S. behind Netflix and Amazon. And Hulu is also growing and generating a lot of revenue on the subscription and advertising side for Disney, which is now its parent company. So those are all positives, but there are definitely some signs of trouble and tension. The first one is that, you know, when Hulu was created, it was basically owned by the four big media companies, Disney, Fox, NBC Universal, each had a 30% share. And then the company that became Warner Media had a 10% share. So that ownership structure was inherently tense because you had four competitors, but they also kind of checked and balanced each other, and there was some sense of equilibrium. Now, after Disney and Fox merged, Hulu became asymmetrical, with NBC Universal suddenly on the outside. And NBC Universal at the same time has launched its own streaming service, Peacock. So now NBC Universal does not have any incentive to build up Hulu. It has an incentive to undermine it, which it's basically doing by pulling some of its content out of Hulu and onto Peacock. So I think those are some fault lines. And then there's also some internal tension within Disney as to how Hulu fits into the whole streaming portfolio. The president of Hulu resigned this year and ironically joined Peacock. And now you've got Disney Plus, which has emerged as basically the flagship streaming service at Disney. So it's not inconceivable to think of some kind of rebranding or repositioning of Hulu. Maybe it would be more of a content studio or fill some other role within that portfolio, but not be sort of like a standalone distributor or aggregator.
Huh. So you're imagining that Hulu would get rolled up into something, or they would just take the Hulu brand, the Hulu name, and rename it as something?
I'm thinking more that Disney will use Hulu as a brand within its streaming service, but not necessarily operate Hulu as sort of like a standalone streaming service.
So therefore, it wouldn't be part of its bundle.
It might not be, right. And I also think that this is something that could happen gradually. So that's why I say reposition or rebrand, because I don't think it's suddenly, you know, I don't think Disney is suddenly going to pull the plug on Hulu. But I do think that it's slowly going to start rebranding or repositioning it within that portfolio.
Well, it's fascinating because our colleague Ross Benish, who covers TV and video, he was saying to me on another episode that he doesn't think the strategy of having the bundle, having multiple different services, makes sense. He thinks that they should be all within one, because you're going to get different people to A, sign up to them, but then B, sign into them, and they're all these separate silos. Right. So for him, it makes more sense for them to actually all live under the same roof.
Yeah, and that's part of what my thinking is as well, is that with the clutter now of all these different services by different companies and, you know, different mergers and acquisitions, that it's really more in your best interest to solidify around a brand. And there's no stronger brand than Disney, you know, not just in media, but in general. It's one of the, you know, most renowned brands in the world. So I think to consolidate more of that around Disney, I mean, they already have ESPN, which is a completely separate brand, obviously owned by Disney. But in terms of selling people on subscriptions to entertainment content, I think Hulu and Disney are starting to grate against each other a little bit.
And it's not going to be a surprise to anyone to realize that we've had a lot of new services, a lot of new SVOD, AVOD services in the last couple of years, and they've been well-timed because a lot of people are spending a lot more time at home. I won't go through the list. You know them. Paul, next year, any new ones, or are we done for a while?
I think we're definitely going to see at least one major AVOD advertising video on demand player in 2022. So I just mentioned the subscription.
A new one.
Yes, a new one. Yeah. And I just mentioned that, you know, there have been a lot of subscription services that have launched in the past 18 months or so. A lot of them are now past their sort of like promotional or bundle deals. So consumers are now faced with a mounting set of bills to access all of this content that they like to watch. In fact, Deloitte just issued a report that predicts that there will be a lot of SVOD cancellations in 2022. So I think there's kind of been a pendulum shift to ad-supported services like Tubi and Pluto, and also subscription services like HBO Max have now added advertising tiers. So our own forecasts are showing that there's going to be a lot of growth in AVOD viewership, and there's some third-party data that's shown a big increase in time spent. So I think there are going to be more of these services. Eventually, there's probably going to be a consolidation, but before that, there's going to be more expansion. And just to name some of the companies that might throw their hats in the ring, and they've already kind of like signaled that they might, are Univision, A&E, and Redbox. But there could be others as well.
Okay. And if you had to bet your life on it, who's most likely, in your opinion?
I'll go with Univision on that one.
It's high stakes, Paul. You bet your life just then.
Yeah.
Let's get another prediction, very specific prediction. And Andrew, this has something to do with, I'd say, a familiar face, but kind of a peripheral face, I think. A face that people want to live in this space, but has kind of, I don't know, been playing on the edges of the space for a while with regards to TV. Who are we expecting to jump back in?
Yeah, well, so this prediction is about Apple, but let me take a quick step back. My spidey sense just started really going off that I feel like 2022 is going to be a big year for Apple. And I started ticking down the possibilities, like what could be a big move from Apple? I think there's something brewing in advertising, and maybe it's not 2022, but I think there's a bigger play maybe in search, maybe in big brand advertising. It's probably coming. The next one was cars. We know that Apple is sort of reaccelerated their ambitions on cars, but it doesn't feel imminent yet. But TV, this is something that's coming back to the forefront. And I think this is going to be a huge year for Apple's TV ambitions. And I'll get more specific. So it all begins with the content. Apple TV Plus has started to have some success. They've got some real flagship shows with Ted Lasso, breakout hit, The Morning Show, some other good content that's starting to roll out. And this is all under the direction of Richard Plepler, who came from HBO. And He came a couple of years ago, and now we're starting to see the fruits of his efforts as these shows start to get rolled out. 2022, for those not paying close attention, I mean, the number of A-list celebrities that have shows, limited series, or movies on Apple is just unbelievable. Just to tick off a few, Leonardo DiCaprio, Robert De Niro, Tom Hanks, Will Smith, Brie Larson, Jared Leto, Anne Hathaway. Also, one of my favorites, Fraggle Rock, is going to be coming back. For those that remember that, that was my favorite back in the 80s. So I think there's just a lot going on the content side. And, you know, content is where the power comes from. So first, I think Apple TV Plus basically is going to be mentioned in the same breath as HBO and Netflix and having best-in-class content. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, I think Apple is going to get into the TV hardware game, that they are going to introduce a screen.
Really?
I don't think, because we haven't heard any rumors yet, that it's going to happen in 2022, but I think we'll hear the first rumors that this is happening. So maybe more likely in 2023. Why do I think that's the case? Apple has all these different disparate media efforts that are happening. Apple TV Plus, Fitness Plus, they're getting into games, all these different experiences. FaceTime, by the way, has been a breakout hit, but it's not on the big screen. I think Apple is going to reimagine the TV screen, integrating with all these different experiences. And the reason why now, I mean, Apple's always been unbelievably patient, but you know, their only hardware in TV is the old Apple TV puck. And the whole puck and stick game is basically dwindling as we move directly into smart TVs. Well, Amazon this year launched a smart TV series, and they have an ability to subsidize those devices and get them in the hands of consumers, particularly around Prime Day. So Apple just can't continue to drag its feet if they're moving in this direction. So I think we're going to see very clearly in 2022 exactly what Apple's strategy for TV is going to be.
Paul, you cover TV and video for us. I mean, how much noise can Apple make in this space? Or are they just too late to the party?
Well, we've been talking about Apple basically doing what Andrew is describing for many, many years. So on the one hand, part of me is skeptical that they're ever going to do it, but part of me thinks that Andrew's on the money and that this is the time. And a lot of it does have to do with content finally, you know, the Apple finally developing quality content and making an imprint. So, you know, I think they clearly have all of the pieces in place. As you know, whether they put it together and when exactly remains to be seen. But, you know, by the way, in addition to the Apple TV puck, they did several years ago, they had teased basically a television, like an actual Apple TV, and it just went nowhere. You know, nothing ever happened with it, but it was at least rumored and maybe even mentioned by Apple executives. I don't recall. It was a long time ago, but yeah, I think there's definitely a lot to this.
One of the reasons that it's been said that they stayed out of the TV business is that it's like the most commoditized business. There's no margins. It's a race to the bottom. And Apple's just not interested in a low margin category. That makes sense, but things have changed, and Apple itself is increasingly a services company, right? So to me, the rationale, like why now, why is it different? It's because it integrates with all of these services and it becomes a central point. I also think fitness is a really important key to their future. So I think about all of the, you know, mirror and all of these kind of screen-based in-home fitness devices. I feel like it would be outfitted for that use as well, plugging into Apple Watch. I mean, and it just should be that kind of central hub for all these activities that you're doing. I feel like this is how all the pieces that Apple has coalesce and come together finally.
Yeah, we've got the central hub that lives in our pocket. Can they create the central hub that's bigger, lives in our home? There are media predictions for you. Amazon will buy a sports media company. Disney will reposition Hulu. Expecting a new AVOD player in 2022. Paul bets life on it. And Apple will reemerge as the gorilla in the looming TV wars. So there are media predictions. We've also got a couple of bonus ones for you. One from Andrew, one from Paul. Andrew, your bonus prediction.
Well, so there's a lot of talk about super apps. I think we're going to see a ton of buzz this year about the potential for mergers like the one we heard about rumored with Pinterest and PayPal. I will say some of them may come to fruition. I don't know if there are any that will, but if any does, I will say the most likely one, and I'm not the only one who's come up with this, but Square and Twitter, obviously the Jack Dorsey connection, but Jack Dorsey just bowed out and pass the reins off to their CTO. So maybe there's something brewing there where they're going to move in that direction. I will say this. I don't think any of the super app ambitions will ultimately net out how anybody wants. I don't think you could just take a commerce or payments play and mash it up with a media play and turn it into a super app. Everybody wants to be WeChat. And to me, WeChat is unique. It was born at a certain time with media and commerce already converged in a single app. I just don't think trying to take two things and Frankenstein them together is ever going to work here in Western markets.
Yeah. When Andrew said Square, everyone knows what he meant because that's what everyone block, knows sorry, them as. They changed the block now. Yeah. Which they're still Square. The same as Facebook. It's Meta, but it's not. It's Facebook still. Debbie, you cover social for us. Super apps. Are they possible on this side of the planet? In China, huge WeChat, obviously the dominant one there, but will they ever make it over to the Western world?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it for years with regards to Facebook, and so far, no. I mean, Facebook has tried to bring commerce in. It's tried to, you know, tried and sort of failed to launch a digital currency. So I agree with Andrew's point that, you know, simply just glomming a commerce feature on top of another type of thing, whether it's media or social, doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. Outside of China, yeah, I mean, Southeast Asia is another hotbed for super apps. You've got companies like Grab and Gojek who are becoming very successful in that region. We have even an airline called AirAsia that has decided it is going to become a super app and is adding all sorts of features ranging from food delivery to, you know, e-commerce to travel planning and ride hailing on top of its basic, you know, airline app. So, you know, I'm not ruling out that it could happen in the West, but I think it's just going to be a very slow process, and it's going to take a lot for consumers to understand why they'd want to, say, use their airline app to order food. I mean, it doesn't make sense off the top right. of your head right here, right yep. here in the United States.
Yep. One more bonus one for you guys, and this comes from Mr. Werner. Bonus, very specific prediction.
Yeah.
Bonus from what I'm told.
Yeah. So Andrew brought up Jack Dorsey, and Jack Dorsey obviously gave up the CEO mantle at Twitter. My prediction is that in 2022, he will give up something else, and that is that beard. He's going to shave that beard because it's just simply unsustainable.
What do you know about this?
It just can't keep happening. I can't keep looking at it.
You should braid it. Don't braid it. Get rid of it.
I like the look of the beard with the tie-dyed shirt.
It's tough to pull off. There's a strong look if you can. That's all we've got time for the episode. It's time now for the post-game report. This is the part where we're going to quickly recap the trends, and then I'll ask the analysts to give me the prediction, their very specific prediction that they're most confident about, and then one other one that wasn't their prediction that one of their colleagues mentioned that they're also very confident about. So two each, one of your own, one from one of your other colleagues. Just to recap, we talked about TikTok pushing YouTube to do something crazy. YouTube abandoning Shorts, Clubhouse not lasting the year, at least as a standalone company, Facebook underperforming the benchmark, the market. Amazon will drastically accelerate its physical store rollout. Amazon will also buy a sports media company. They'll be busy. Disney will reposition Hulu. There'll be a new AVOD player. Apple will reemerge as the gorilla in the looming TV wars. And super app merger mania will take hold in 2022. And then also, if anyone mentions Jack Dorsey's beard as their takeaways, I'm going to lose it. So don't do that. Let's start with Debbie. What prediction are you most confident in, and one from your colleagues?
Shoot, I was totally going to go with the beard. Okay. So So among the real predictions. Yeah. So I'm going to go with among my own, the fact that Clubhouse will not last the year as a standalone company. Mm. And of my colleagues' predictions, they were all fantastic. But I think based on what I just heard, the one about Hulu's repositioning coming, Paul's prediction about Hulu's repositioning, to me sounds like absolutely the most plausible thing. So those are my choices.
Very nice. Let's move on straight to Paul.
Well, Debbie, I appreciate the vote of confidence. I'm actually a little bit less sure about that one. Oh, although now I'm rethinking it. But I think the one about YouTube and TikTok, I think, is almost a no-brainer that YouTube will do something that kind of reflects the threat from TikTok. But I'm actually going to go with Amazon and the sports media company. I think it's a little more of a bold prediction, but I'm going to put my, maybe not bet my life, but put my stake in the ground. As far as my colleagues' predictions, I'm kind of torn, Debbie, between yours on Clubhouse, which I think is on the money. Actually, I think all of yours, both of you were on the money, but that one I think really resonates because it's very concrete and it seems very plausible. But also, Andrew, your whole idea about Apple and its ambitions and its plans on TV, I think that's a little less clear cut in terms of like an actual prediction and a specific one, but definitely I see Apple heading in that direction. So if I can hedge, I'm going to say those two are the ones that really
resonate
with me.
You can't hedge. What do you mean if you can hedge? That's not the rules at all, Paul. This is not the weekly listen where you do what you want, Paul. We've got rules here. Pick one.
All right. I'll go with Clubhouse.
Clubhouse it is.
Just because it's more specific and we can, you know, at next year when we get back together to do this, it'll be easier to say yes or no to that.
Okay. Andrew, what you got?
For my own, I feel most confident about Amazon's physical store rollout. I can't see any way that it doesn't happen. If I'm not right on it, it's just on the number, but I have to, it's going to hockey stick in a way that it hasn't previously. As for my colleagues, I think we have consensus here around Debbie's prediction on Clubhouse. When she first presented it to us, when your first thought is, oh, why didn't I think of that? It's so right. I mean, I would bet a lot of money on that one. I think it's going to happen. And you know, it not always is past prologue, but in this case, I look back to last year and I feel like Quibi was the one where we probably should have predicted Quibi's demise. Clubhouse feels very similar to that. So Debbie, I think you get the crown on this one.
She certainly does.
Why, thank you.
My very specific prediction is that we'll do this again in about 6 months' time, see how they went, and maybe give you a couple of more to round out the rest of the year. So tune back in for that episode. But that's all we've got time for this one. Thank you so much to my guests. Thank you to Debbie.
Thank you, Marcus.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
Thank you to Paul.
Thank you.
Thank you to Victoria. She edits the show. And thanks to everyone listening in. We'll see you tomorrow for the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Basis Technologies. Can you hear me, Debbie? Oh, am I on mute? The whole time. I was like, Debbie, why are you ignoring me? I was on mute the whole time.
It's not my fault!
So why is she being like this? Flying start.